creatures of every make and model, fans of entertainment, shenanigans alike. Welcome back to Legends Podcast. I'm Beef.
I'm Wing.
And I'm John O'Lobster. Imagine, if you will, two comic book writers who spawn a 75-year billion-dollar media empire. Now one takes all the credit and becomes a household name, while the other toils in relative obscurity despite contributing everything that makes the characters recognizable. No, we're not talking about Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. We're talking about Batman and Bill.
Wait a minute.
God.
That happened with them too? I'm confused.
Why do you think Marvel has all co-creators and DC doesn't yet? Because Marvel at some point just made a deal with everyone that was pissed and they were like, it's going to be simpler just to pay them. But then they almost closed because they were not profitable anymore. It's complicated.
I mean, when's the last time you saw Jack Kirby do a cameo in a Marvel movie?
He was never. Dead.
Well, that's true, but...
Semantics, yes, Wing, semantics.
Sure.
His name is still at the end of the movie. Yeah, he still has credit.
He was a very private man as well, so he didn't want to be.
Yeah, it's not like Stan, you don't have credit at all, and when you get your first credit, it's on the biggest flop of your character.
Stan Lee is the showman. Stan Lee wanted to be out in front. But again, we're not talking Marvel. We're talking about DC and Batman specifically.
Yeah, and we're talking about Batman and Bill, we're going to be talking a lot about Bill Finger, but we kind of need to touch on Bob Kane before we get to the movie.
I don't want to touch on Bob Kane.
Kind of a prick.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of a prick in the 40s when nobody thought these characters would last.
No. In the 40s, I believe he was he was kind of right in thinking what he was doing, so to speak, because back then nobody thought it would get this huge, right? None of that. But how many, just in this documentary, 60s, in the 60s, in the 70s, all that shit, how many times did he have opportunity to at least reverse it? And I get if you live a lie or you lie to yourself, it becomes a truth to you, and that's, you have to live that way. But after so many years, Bob Kane could have said something, and I just, wow.
Yeah, I think that when Bill died in the 70s, Bob Kane was like, yeah, screw it. That's never going to change
now. The one tape that they played of him saying he created 50 to 75% of everything that is Batman later. That was like the 80s.
Signal, right. Commissioner Gordon, Robin, the Joker, etc.
His backstory of kid getting killed, parents getting killed.
Being
right
Bruce Wayne. And even as we saw, they kind of depict in the film, the coming up with the cape and cowl and everything.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was a red suit with a small mask and fixed wings.
Yep. Well, according to the book, in 1934, he drew it out on a napkin somewhere.
Bullshit.
But yeah, that's the bullshit part a little bit. Because everybody else that was there around that time or worked at DC Comics knew that.
And if he had it for 40 years or whatever before he found that back in his... locker or whatever he said, safe. You don't think he would have busted that out earlier?
That's what the thing I always wonder. Like, let's say tomorrow morning, Beef, you become an international star. How long does it take for us to go back to your shit to find, like, that drawing you made or that tape, mixtape you made in third grade and that becomes
your shit?
This
is in his safe. This was supposedly, like, I don't know. It seems like such a lie, but what the fuck do I know?
Yeah.
Well, I think part of it is that Bill Kane has kind of built this narrative on...
Bob Kane, not Bill Kane.
Bob Kane. Bob Kane kind of built this narrative. But what other important comics properties did Bob Kane create?
He did nothing good.
He drew on some stuff early, I think they were saying.
Yeah, he did.
No, he was an artist when he was never a breakout artist.
Like kids' comic strips, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the style of the 40s. And I think he pretty much like stopped doing a bit of that and started just managing Batman in the 50s when there was like
the black and white serials.
The serials, The six-page letter, though, that he wrote to the Batmania magazine, like... All over Bob Finger and anything he had to do with it.
Bill Finger.
Bob Jesus King. Christ. Sorry.
We're fucked. We're screwed on this.
But just refuting all that stuff that Bill Finger did, so horrible. I mean, you don't need that much space unless you're creating a narrative for yourself or you're bullshitting.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. But
I mean, you can always, you could just say Bill Finger can say whatever he wants. I know the truth.
Right. Or, you know, but you don't, if you got to paint it all in, yeah. Too much detail, man. Too much detail.
Too many layers to the lie.
What about when Bill Finger got to finally go see his name on a Batman something, which was the TV series?
The TV show, yeah.
And he asked the dude for top billing.
How did you watch that after the documentary?
Oh, did you watch it?
Yeah.
Did you really?
It's not a great episode.
No.
Okay, can I ask you?
I mean, I feel like most of those episodes are not particularly.
Did he have a large, was there like a large contraption in it?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a huge egg fight at the end.
Okay, because as soon as I was watching this and they said something like, you know, in his stories, he was known for writing about the big machines and the big contraptions.
The giant penny.
That's all I could remember from the 60s TV show where like the four or five times he fought with, you know.
But yes, there's a giant egg kind of machine, but that was a staple of that show in the 60s. You could not go two weeks without one.
That's what I mean, though. I almost did it again. Bill Finger created that in the comics early on.
The trope.
Yeah.
He created most of the Batman tropes that we look at and say are tropes.
But as soon as I saw that or that I heard that, I went, that is about the only thing I remember from the TV show, sure. Other than the villains and everything, is that there was always a large machine or large set.
That's why I like the credit he ultimately get, which is not like end, but it's wit. Because
with Bill Finger, yeah.
Because if let's take all the emotion back,
sure.
Out of that for a second, just character creation. Bob Kane came with an idea. Not complete, but a good idea.
Yeah.
Bill Finger completed the idea.
A guy named Batman, the superhero, right?
And the semi-outline of a sketch. And yes, Bob Kane did do that, but Bill Finger crafted and molded all of the story.
He couldn't.
But that's why I like the width and not the end.
Bob Kane with Bill Finger because he couldn't have done it without him.
Yeah, no, you're right. I see. And I got kind of pissed. One of my notes here is like, when they said it will be on this and that, they're talking
Gotham
about,
and BVS.
Yeah, and I was like, Gotham and Dawn of Justice. My next quote is, that's fucking it? And then at the end it said, you know, forever going forward on all Batman properties. That made me feel better.
Yeah,
it's not the greatest start, but that made us came up with a fun like little story from the Legend stream when you were doing Gotham Nightlife.
So back in season one of Gotham, I was doing a podcast for Gonna Geek called Gotham Nightline, and it was a weekly podcast about the show. And one of the first episodes, I think before the show even started, I had Wing on as a guest to talk about some of the expectations. And you mentioned Bill Finger, and I was like, yeah, sure, Bill Finger. And I was like, I don't know who the hell he's talking about, but whatever. And I just kind of went with it. And that's the first time I'd ever even heard of Bill Finger.
Yeah, and the reason why I heard of Bill Finger is because of the book. The book came out a little bit.
Bill the Boy Wonder by our kind of protagonist in the documentary, Mark Tyler Nobleman, who went on this quest to kind of uncover not just the secret history of Batman, but actually to find the heir to Bill Finger so they could challenge the copyright.
And let's face it, that's a movie story in itself. Right.
Oh,
because
you almost don't want to. I don't know if we want to talk about it too much in depth. Basically, if you haven't seen this movie, watch it.
Right,
like you should watch this documentary like a movie.
I don't want to spoil how they discover how they get everything set right. I mean, obviously, we know now that Bill Finger is getting credit for being a co-creator of Batman, but how this documentary unfolds that and keeps you in suspense.
Because even if you already
know, and you like at multiple points, you're like, oh my God, this is a dead end. They're never going to, you know, this is going to die with Bill Finger or his, you know, his next descendant.
Did that took anything away from you? Because you knew he was credited.
Right. I knew he was credited, but
I didn't.
Also,
You didn't?
No.
Oh, okay.
Because I didn't. I started watching.
You don't read the credit. Okay, okay. You don't read the credit. No, I know.
I don't. Why would I? I'm going to see a movie anyways. I don't give a fuck who directed it or who it's created by. Most of the stuff I know, and that doesn't. That's all blah to me. That's why I don't like reading. Whatever.
You don't like Marvel movies that make you sit through the credits.
Right. Exactly. That annoys me. But I watched half of this yesterday, and I watched the other half today. And
were you away at the end?
What's that?
Were you blown away at the end?
Yeah, and I cried like literally. It got dusty and teared up like three times.
No, I cried at the end like
when
a baby.
Bill Finger's second wife is starting to talk about him. Her love for him just pours out, and I was like, "Oh my god, what the fuck?" Yeah, I don't know. It just it blew me away because I didn't know if he actually got this. There's only one time that. Nobleman gives it away, and he says, you know, usually David and Goliath stories, David never comes out on top. It's usually Goliath is the one in these situations, or he said something like that, and I'm like, okay, well, I think they won.
Maybe it works out. It's a happy ending.
Yeah,
I think they went with the idea. This movie came out after it was credited, so they came with the idea that some people knew, but some people didn't, so they kind of also, give it away, but if you don't pay attention to it.
Yeah, and also the film is produced by Warner Brothers, so you've got to you've got to figure that they're on. Like, this isn't a guerrilla documentary, which I'll mention another one in a minute that I watched over the weekend after I watched this, because I was like, okay, what's next?
Yeah, so, a bunch too.
So Warner Brothers and Hulu produced this documentary, and it aired exclusively on Hulu streaming service. So. The fact that Warner Brothers helped make this or helped tell this story, you got to figure that they're at least okay with the way that it turned out. And I like that they kind of made this film, not as an apology, but they stonewalled for a long time going back to.
Oh, what was that line at the Comic-Con? We're good with the Finger family and we always have been something.
And even going back to the 80s and 90s Batman films with Michael Keaton, they were trying to get recognition at that point. Bill Finger's wife was trying to get recognition.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, Warner Brothers, DC has stonewalled this story for a long time, and it finally got to the tipping point that
basically the super crowdsource.
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you know what? There's another thing, but I don't want to assume because the movie does not answer that question. Okay, I'm going out of bound. I'm extrapolating a little bit.
What the family got in cash?
Yeah, I'm assuming that what they really went for is the credit line, and they didn't ask for too much cash, which Warner was like, you know what? Let's sign this before her son comes back like the Shusher sons, and that they almost lost Superman a couple of years ago. That was big.
Yeah, so, I mean, but a little bit. You look at if this man is literally owed 50%, give or take.
Sure.
You know, they could give her fucking $30 million, $20 million easily, if not more, and just say, okay, here, this is for you and your son and his heirs. Spend it, invest it wisely. Please sign here. Never come back to us with your hand out.
Right.
I mean,
and
yeah, but that didn't, again, I go back to the Superman one. They tried that. That didn't work. And they have all that experience when they get with the Fingers.
But they already got the line on. They already got the credit line. Or the, what you call it?
The Schuster?
With Siegel and Schuster and Superman, the families were suing for ownership rights to the character. So basically, if the families say that DC can't use Superman anymore, they can't use Superman anymore.
This might have just been acknowledgement towards the creation.
Right.
But I guarantee you that in that contract that they sign, it says that they can't ask for any ownership of the character ever.
Right? No, yeah, I guarantee sure. You. Well, yeah, definitely. I can imagine that.
They use that to back themselves up, even if they got, like, let's say 0.05% of Batman profit for the rest of eternity, like as long as they have heirs and all that crap. Do you know how much money that represents in a year? Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Lego Batman, Batman games, sure. Batman pajamas, Batman pillowcases. Like,
and you don't need a movie. You can just read Batman crap. You know, it already been so well marketed, you can keep selling it.
You know, when they were talking in the very beginning about Batman is easily, he is the most recognizable symbol, character, ideal, probably on the planet.
Sure.
That freaked me out for a minute. At some point,
that's going to change, though.
Yeah, but...
Look at Superman. Superman was because Superman came out of World War II, and we needed a beacon of hope. Everybody was relying behind him. Anyway, everybody was behind him. All of a sudden, you go to Vietnam in the 80s, and the Batman movie hits. And the Batman movie is everyone, all of us, fighting the system. Or fighting what doesn't work in the system. And that's way more personal. So Batman got on top. So it's been like, what, 25, 30 years at that point that I would say Batman just surpassed Superman.
Sure.
What's the next thing? Wonder Woman's a good position right now.
Yeah, Wonder Woman's set up nicely.
Yeah, but this is like the core. They're always going to come back to Batman, yeah, Superman. Yeah.
And still, it's definitely, if you look at, like, DC is going to keep making Batman movies, good or bad, or Batman-related movies, like Suicide forever. Squad, whatever, like, yeah, so it's going to be a thing going on for a bit.
Oh, my dog, Bruce Wayne. I started to fucking tear up there,
yeah,
too.
Sure. That's yeah, when you that knew. Was so That's cute. When you knew it was right. It was real.
Right.
He went on MySpace. That's when I knew it was a long time ago.
When when he got all that, when they started to get all the, when he was reading the accomplishment tweets and shit, it had me there again, too. Like when Kevin Smith texted Nobleman. And all these people, like, just randomly were shooting him texts, like, you know. I don't know. That was cool.
The part that got me, and I'm not going to spoil it, but it's the last reveal. The very last reveal.
I want to spoil that because I want to talk about it a little bit.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, okay, we've already said that they get the byline, right? Or what do you call it, the take?
Yeah, the first time on the big screen is in Batman versus Superman, okay. Dawn of Justice.
So... I forgot that they showed that during the whole, we're going to show Batman's fucking Genesis for the 4,000th time.
Yeah. So, killing Wayne's.
Yeah, Wayne's story, his parents dying. I thought that was cool, but I also, while it was like an homage to Mr. Finger, I also thought it was kind of like a dick move in the same way, because everyone's paying attention to this new version, showing of...
Yeah, but that was a Bill Finger creation. Correct. Yeah.
Right, but I think it's both, though. It's cool because Finger created it, but it's also there because everyone's paying attention to this again, and idiots like me aren't reading that.
I don't know. I read it.
Well, that's why I said idiots like me.
Yeah, but idiot like you, I go back to how Lobster heard the name. Idiots like you listen to idiots like me that know about that. Sure. And then the story grows. And then for some reason, a couple of years later, we're making a podcast about the documentary and we're spreading the...
Right. The finger? Legend of Bill Finger. We're spreading the finger. Yeah. We're going around poking people.
Sprinkled his pops in the shape of a what's the name? Symbol. Yeah. That was...
Okay. Sure. I agree that the son probably did, and that's the part that touched me. The son got the ashes.
Yeah.
Daddy put them in a Batman logo on the side of the beach.
But the kid, the son's was passing at the time, and he told a couple of his friends.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why you lie about that, but I guess maybe. You know, either way, it's a cool gesture.
It's cool that that's how we're going to remember it.
Sure.
I'm going to give it at that. But the fact that they found that it was not just a number in the
Potter's Field.
Yeah, that got to me.
Yeah, that killed me when he was supposedly just a number in the Potter's Field. I was like, are you fucking serious? What's his face? Mr. Kane couldn't even get him a goddamn burial.
Yeah.
I mean, they were supposedly friends or acquaintances before the Batman thing.
Yeah. That's why he went to him for help.
They had
19 years old, you know? The friends that you had at 18, 19.
I still have a handful of them. They had to be, I mean, they had to be somewhat close because he went and sat in on whatever, the very first Comic-Con. In the stead of Bob Kane or whatever, what was that, 20 years later? What did I say, 65?
Yeah.
Yep. So that was 26 years after they created. So they had to be decent friends for, you'd figure, quite some of that time.
Bob Kane was living in L.A.
He still worked for D.C.
Yeah, Bob Kane was living in L.A. And L.A. was not really working for D.C. as much as cashing checks, as Bill Finger was still a ghostwriter for Batman and other character for
right
DC
he was
Comics.
Working for Carmine Infantino. He's working for other people that were doing DC stories.
Yeah, the man has been a ghostwriter all his life, so yeah.
But again, like they said, they, you know, they, the, well, the show said that ghostwriter is completely different than what he normally did with Batman. Yeah. What he did with Batman, a ghostwriter takes those tropes and that stuff and just creates stories with them. He created all that shit for Batman.
I was talking about his work in the 60s while
Walton
was in L.A.
I guess kind of the thing that we have to understand, or at least address, is that it was not viewed as a glamorous job to write for comic books.
Right.
It was kind of something that you did and didn't tell people that's what you did, because it was viewed as being, well, one, comic books were viewed as being a little bit subversive, right? Like, they weren't like widely viewed the way, like, now we view comic books as acceptable cultural material, right? Back then it was like, you're reading the funny pages. Come on, those are for kids.
That's why Stanley changed his name. He wanted to be a serious writer after doing this in the 60s. So
the other thing is, like, if you were a ghostwriter, like, you didn't want people to know that you wrote for comic books. So a lot of people deliberately changed their name or used a pseudonym or withheld their name so they wouldn't be recognized as comic book writers.
The funny book writer.
Right. So I guess part of it is it's understandable why Bill Finger at the time wanted to distance himself from the creation. Like, he did it because he enjoyed it, but he didn't want necessarily like that to be public knowledge.
Okay, but now I guess my other question then is, if you worked at DC for so many years still, did he have as large of a part or even small chunks in many books of other, not just ghostwriting, but large contributions, right?
Yeah, did he create it? Well, he created villains here left and right, like every other writer of the era, because you needed to.
Right, and Batman notably has a huge rogues gallery.
Yeah.
But anyone who's watched Gotham.
But he was writing a lot of Western book, a lot of, you know what was working at the time? There was romance book in the 60s, sure. In the 50s and the 60s. And when the comic code came, that's the other thing you need to remember, is that making comic was not glamorous. The reason Bob Kane was making money is not because he was still making comics. It's because he was in the Batman business.
Right.
He was not in the comic business.
No, exactly.
He sold that and he tried to become Bruce Wayne. Like they said, he tried to become like a bat playboy.
Yeah, and that's why he sold the right to do the TV show, because there was nothing else to do with it, and he got lucky. It worked, but he got lucky. The Batmania started at that point, restarted at that point, and the rest is history. But point is, there was nothing glamorous before that first Comic-Con.
Oh, it was so campy, too. It was so campy before. Like, they went from the semi-serious product to the campy show.
First of all, that's not true.
That's how they made it sound in the thing.
The product became serious, reactionary to the TV show, because writers were like, we don't want to write that now, we want to make him more realistic.
Maybe they didn't
so
say
you
serious.
Had
like
did
they say dark? I know they said something like that.
The Dark Knight.
He did.
He
bring
was
that up.
Bill Finger was the first person that, to call him the Dark.
So that was dark a little bit at the start, but as soon as they brought Robin a year after, it became really bright. Then you had the 60s, then you had a Neil Adam that reinvented their characters at the start of the 70s. But that's besides the point.
Sure.
The point is that at that point, you had the Batmania going up, and now the Batman business became something interesting, and now comic book were starting to be read by the same way we play video game today. Comic book readers grew up and kept reading comic books.
Yeah.
Where we played Mario Brothers when we were young, and we kept playing video games. So the same thing happened, and it's that Comic Con and what ensued that made the and a lot. Stanley is a lot to credit to the fact that being a comic book writer all of a sudden was cool.
Sure. Yeah, it's a big mess, and to be honest, there are still pervasive issues in the comic book industry about creators' rights. Recently, Len Wein, who created Wolverine, passed away, and so like for a long time, these iconic characters, the creators, because they were owned by the publisher, the creators saw bupkis from any of the residuals or profits or anything. So
well, they sold Batman or Superman for what, $135 or whatever.
Sure.
I was listening at, because after this I was curious to listen to other documentary about other comic book artists, and I watched one on with Todd McFarlane, like one that he made last year, and that's what he was talking about. It was, I was drawing Spider-Man, I was seeing these huge number, and I was receiving $500 for two weeks of work or something like that. Then we started Image, and you were selling a 125th of how many Spider-Man you were making, but you were making 100% of the profit, so you were receiving $500,000 every 2 weeks. This is the start of the 90s, let's be honest.
And he's still doing it.
We lost a lot of artists.
Right?
Yeah.
Just because of the freaking toys, too. I love him.
But when you hear that guy, it's beautiful, because he listen to the stories of all these Bill Finger, the Shusher, and all that, and was like, no, if I want this to work, I need a couple of pillar. I need to be able to do my own marketing. I need toys. I need movies. I need
Is that on Netflix TV or somewhere? Show. Where can I find that documentary?
That's on YouTube.
Really?
That was a YouTube interview. There's like a series of them. I just happened to stumble across it. So,
So after this, I watched a movie called Doomed, which is the untold story of Roger Corman's Fantastic Four film from the 1990s that never got released. So they made this whole movie and filmed it, and effects and everything, did promotion for it, cut a trailer, and then Marvel buried it. Well, Marvel or the studio, there's a couple different theories about why it was buried. The idea behind it was that they had to put the movie in production so the film studio could keep the rights to the Fantastic Four. We know that Marvel sold off a bunch of their properties, film rights, in the 90s to stave off bankruptcy. So really, it's not... The documentary is not as well made as Batman and Bill, but it's very, very interesting to kind of look at another side of this in terms of just the business aspect. And yet at the same time, you're toying with these people's careers, all the actors, the director of the movie. Again, the movie was made for very little money and is probably not that great. It's a Corman movie, right? So it's a B movie, but at the same time, the people spent months of their lives working on this.
They put all the money on the thing suit. The Generations thing suit is amazing.
X-Men, Generation, what was the one?
No, Generation X is a masterpeace beside Corbin.
By the same studio, New Horizons.
Really?
And it's still a masterpiece.
Yeah. New Horizons at the time had made the Captain America, the Punisher.
So does that mean we got to make Wing watch this?
I've watched this multiple times. You're the only ones that haven't.
Yeah.
I don't want
to
go there.
The documentary, though, the documentary would be fun to watch. You don't have to.
Yes.
You don't necessarily have to have seen the Fantastic Four movie. They show a lot of the pieces of it that give you an idea what it's like. Doomed. Yeah. Also on Hulu.
The Todd McFarlane ones I was talking about is on YouTube. It's called Blueprint Spider-Man to Spawn.
You know what I thought was cool about this one, too? What the hell did we just watch? The Batman thing. Where they were talking about, Hollywood expects this to be one of the biggest movies of all time, somewhere between $30 and $50 million. And then they're like, coming in at a whopping $41 million. I started chuckling.
Yeah, but it's $41 million in 1989.
I know. I don't know. It's weird because it sounds so quaint. I know, it sounds so quaint. That's like what they spend on two of the actors in one of these movies now.
wait, Jack Nicholson's still getting paid every time the Joker is on screen today.
Shut up.
Yeah.
How? What?
I'll find you the documentary that was on the Blu-ray I bought, but he's still getting paid. It's nuts, the contract that he has.
Every time the Joker shows up.
Yep. He was paid even for the one with Mr. Freeze where the Joker's not even in it. That gives you an idea. So
what?
Yep. The original series, since it was like of a continuity, the first four was getting paid every movie. A guy was cast to do Robin in the first movie, got paid for three movies, never appeared on screen.
Yeah, they signed a lot of these play or pay contracts. So even if they didn't use you in the film, you still got the money.
What, but Nicholson's still getting paid? He says it himself. It's the biggest paycheck he's ever going to have in his life.
Yeah.
He was walking at the Oscar with a Batman pin for a reason. Yeah, we have to say that comic book studios, we're not that great at negotiating.
Comic book studios and movie studios are not the best at the whole accounting practices thing.
No. So, still give you an idea, but it's interesting to see all these people finally getting recognized in some ways, even if it took too long. And let's face it, Bill Finger probably had one of the worst end that you can imagine. Yeah. Basically being forgotten.
One that I'm looking forward to coming up is called Dr. Marston and the Wonder Woman. And
yes.
It's a dramatized account of the creation of Wonder Woman and W.M. Marston and the two women in his life that kind of inspired him. So that'll be interesting to see, I think, as well. That comes out, I believe, later this year.
Is that more Hulu?
No, it's going to be in theaters.
Oh, okay.
So you won't have to have Hulu or whatever to watch it.
If you're interested in the Superman one, when they released Superman Return, they made a documentary called You'll Believe a Man Get Fly, where they recap basically Superman from start to 2006. And it's very, very good. All the Donner year, it's really interesting to see how Hollywood treated Superman, basically. It's impressive. It's really interesting to see, again, all the producer and the accountings and all that have an influence on the character the same way it has.
And there's also, if movies aren't your thing, well, I don't know why you're listening to our podcast, but there are books on this, too. There are books on this kind of stuff, too, that you can check out and read and internet articles and blog posts. I know.
Audiobook.
Audiobooks put me to bed.
Sure.
By the way, I'm reading Bloodline, the Star Wars book, and it's really good.
I think you read that already.
I listen to podcasts when I fall asleep, so it's ironic that I'm on a podcast. Awesome. I probably put a lot of you to sleep.
Sometimes.
Yeah. All right, folks. Should we rate this?
I think we should.
Wing 4, Batman and Bill. Are you going legendary?
Put a ring on that finger.
Legend of its time.
Bill of Goods.
Cult legend.
True Detective.
Awesome.
The Kane Mutiny.
Entertaining.
Do you see what I did there?
Mabel.
I just can't put my finger on it.
Forgettable.
Yawn of Justice.
Abysmal.
Two Thumbs Down.
Spring Breakers Highlander.
Freddy Got Fingered.
With a Side of Nostalgia, Guilty Pleasure, Tingle Barf Tears.
With a Side of Copyright Law.
Ooh, I think we're all going to have some side of copyright law. I'm going to give this a cult legend. The same way the book was kind of a cult legend. It's something you pass around, not everybody's aware of, but everybody's loves it and keeps passing it around. And
it was a kid's book, too, right? Like it was marketed to kids, right?
Well, yes and no. It was mainly marketed to comic book fan with something easy to approach for kids. But the guy was writing kids' book. This is not a kid book. Well, it could be I'm not going to call it a kid book. So, I'm giving it a True Detective. I think that defined the movie pretty well. And the guy who made the research. But it's a documentary. It's tough to be really boring, except if... Well, you never watch a YouTube documentary of your life. I mean, so what makes this one work is that they're able to build it kind of like a trailer. So that's why I'm giving it like at least in the legendary category, cult legend. Beef?
Oh, Shizzle Snacks. Well, it's going to get a side of copyright law. I don't know how you missed that.
I started with it, Beef. Listen.
Oh, I don't do that. I got to go. Damn, this was really freaking good. And it gave me a lot of info that I never had. I got to go Solid True Detective. I think I got to follow Wing with Cult Legend. It's more than that, though. Everybody knows this character. This will give everyone that you know a little bit of insight about how he was really created. And yeah, this will not be my only viewing for sure. Lobster?
I might have to go a little bit higher and give it the Bill of Goods, the stamp legend of its time. One of my favorite documentaries that I covered on Art House Legends was Man on Wire, Philip Petit, who does the tightrope walk between the Twin Towers in New York City.
So on IMAX, that was not a good idea.
I would have barfed.
So what's really, really cool about that documentary is it takes this event that kind of everybody knows or everybody remembers or has heard of, and then it breaks the documentary down into almost like a heist, like them sneaking in and are they going to get away with it and what's going to go wrong and that kind of stuff. And the kind of fun thing about this documentary is it takes what everyone kind of knows. Everybody knows about Batman. If you know anything about Batman, you know about Bob Kane. If you're really interested in Batman, you've probably heard about Bill Finger, or you noticed his name in the credits for Gotham or Batman versus Superman. So you're curious. You want to know more. And the way that this documentary takes you on this journey and not only connects you with some of the rather obscure aspects of copyright law and how things like this work, but also the emotional angle, like looking at it as getting justice for someone who was wronged and kind of taking the Batman mantle for themselves, which I thought was fantastic the way the film did that. I really, really thought this was well made. It's a shame that it didn't get a release in theaters, that maybe more people could have seen it. But hey, it's on Hulu. You can do a free trial and check it out if you want to watch it. Pretty nifty.
You should.
Do it.
Okay. Last word.
Yeah, that, yes. Bill?
Banger?
Banger! Oh, so
Bill
many good fingers.
Finger.
So many good finger. Oh, that would have been a good one. Goldfinger. So many good finger puns that I had to play around with.
It's difficult, huh?
It's like a Chinese bill trap.
That's right. Oh, Jesus. All right. What time is that?
News time.
All right. Box office in September. We're moving along. It is still number one at the box office, $60 million for the weekend. It is now the top September premiere of all time.
Hey, was striking at $55 million for the first week?
Yeah. $218 million it has made so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nuts.
That's good. Pretty good.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it. But I just read a friend's review of it that was not kind.
So it was not kind, and I don't know. If half of his gripes are realistic, that scares me because, it was something that we all cared about so much. So
Sure. Be interesting to... Yeah, I'll definitely check it out. Do we have any flops this week?
I was calling Mother! A flop attack there, because that thing cost $30 million. There was like big hopes on it. And
sure.
It's very... the audience is so divided on this movie. Some of my friends at Saya told me like it's too much of an artsy movie to be a wide release.
Yeah,
there's a big chance I'm going to like it, but understand why it's not making money. But that's going to barely make its money back.
Can you tell me why it shouldn't be a wide release? You have a better chance of making money. I'm confused.
All right. So I haven't seen it yet either. This is kind of my take on it from what I've read, from what I know about the filmmaker and kind of the background of the film. So Mother is directed by Darren Aronofsky, who has done some commercially successful films, but the kind of staple of his filmmaking is mindfucks, like Requiem for a Dream, Black Swan. That's like his bread and butter. And
yep.
Evidently, Mother is the mindfuckiest mindfuck of them all. Like, he just goes balls to the wall mindfuck with Mother. Okay? So for that to be a wide release film, there's got to be something there for the audience to kind of be like, okay, it's a mindfuck, but it's like an M. Night Shyamalan kind of thing where if you were half paying attention, you saw it coming. So, like, audiences, general audiences, aren't going to like this kind of movie. Now, that's not, I'm not like bashing people. I'm just saying, like, these art house films that get these narrow releases and are considered successful if they make $8 million opening weekend, that's kind of where Mother belonged. Mother went wide, and I think it's a case maybe of overreach.
Go wide, Mother. Go wide.
It's a case maybe of, like, maybe not marketing the film in...
I thought that was another movie, not an art house movie.
It was marketed like a horror movie or a thriller. And I think that's the audience that went to see it. It's the audience that saw it last weekend and was like, okay, let's see something like this again. It's maybe like the Get Out audience that was like maybe expecting kind of a horror comedy. I don't know. I think it's just
there's
a
nothing
case.
In that trailer that said Mother was a comedy.
I don't know. I think it's just a case of the critics and the art house people loved it because it's Darren Aronofsky doing what he does best. The general audiences that maybe hadn't seen Requiem for a Dream or Black Swan, that maybe didn't know what they were getting in for, it got an F cinema score, an F. That's ouch. That's like you go to the movies and literally part of the movie is you have to sit in feces. That's like bad. So I don't know. I don't see how a film is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes and critics love it and it gets an F on CinemaScore. There's some disconnect between the kind of movie it is and the people who went to see it. That's all I got. Wing?
Yep. No, I think that's fair, but I'm going back to business. This movie's going to lose money. Bomb.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean,
they spent $30 million to make it, and another $30 million to market it. They made $8 million.
Yeah, I guess
they're gonna make $30 million.
I guess it's just a bad investment. I don't know. Did they invest the money knowing that Jennifer Lawrence was the star?
Yeah.
And so they spent the money on her. And
no, because she didn't charge a lot because she did it for her boyfriend Darren Aronofsky.
Okay. So I don't know. I think these art house films that open small and then kind of build by word of mouth, if this had opened limited and really built the word of mouth with people going to see it that kind of knew what it was about.
You need to do the Birdman thing with this.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to have people, you have to have the people at work who tell you, okay, go see Mother. But be warned, there's some weird stuff. Like, don't go in there thinking that this is like a straight horror movie. It's something else. Just like Birdman. It's not like it's a comedy, but it's not like a funny ha-ha comedy. It's, and kind of explain it. Or like, I guess it's managing expectations is what I'm going for. I think the studio had expectations for the film. And honestly, if it hadn't come out, maybe Mother's the number one at the box office. Because I think the audience...
August, American Assassin still made twice that money.
August was so bad that when it hit, like, it was like people were starving to go see a good movie. And it may not even have been that great, but it still was the top September premiere of all time. So I think if... Again, manage expectations, start small, build word of mouth, and like prepare your audience for what they're about to see. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah.
But I go but back again, like, to the basic.
What I mean,
look
what are we
or not.
Do? What if it wins an Oscar? I mean, I don't
That's
know.
That's not like, going to win an Oscar at this point.
I don't know.
I would be, you know what? I'm ready to put a quarter on this. There's okay. no Oscar for Mother. Mother! Okay. Sorry, there's a...
Mother!
Yeah, there is an exclamation point at the end.
Yeah, so and then, it's so lowercase m. So, again,
it's true.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't have an answer on this one. Again, like, Requiem for a Dream didn't open at wide release. Even Black Swan, which maybe is his most commercially broad of this type of film. I know The Wrestler, but The Wrestler wasn't quite like even The Wrestler didn't have the reach really like this.
The Wrestler was so good. That's probably my favorite movie of his.
Right, right. And Oscar winning, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where.
The man has talent, sure. but he gets bored of telling like classic story, conventional story. So he plays with this with the systems. He's playing with the grammar and he's moving stuff around. If you do that kind of movie, you either need to Christopher Nolan it yeah. basically, which is like pour a lot of water in it to make
right,
people
right.
keep
you have to
understanding.
You have to lead your audience.
Yeah, or again, do the Birdman thing, exactly yeah. what you described earlier. I'm not going to repeat all that, but Birdman opened at, what, 50 theater?
Yeah.
And by the end, it was in 2,000 theaters, something
yeah.
nuts.
Yeah, start small. Start small, for sure. Again, this is kind of... I live for these kind of debates about the business, like, I guess the Venn diagram where the business circle and the art circle of movies kind of connect, I always get really into because it's so interesting to see people complain about, you know, well, Rotten Tomatoes is killing movies, right? Rotten Tomatoes is killing the box office.
Yeah, that's people...
But,
that's because people are stupid and don't understand what Rotten Tomatoes
right.
is.
And Rotten Tomatoes had Mother certified fresh. And yet people go see it and give it an F cinema score. So there's a disconnect there, which is Rotten Tomatoes did not kill the box office. Shitty movies killed the box office because people didn't want to go see shitty movies. They heard about a movie that was well reviewed. They went to see it and didn't like it. So,
and I think that that's the key thing because I don't agree 100% with your analysis on it. I think it was well marketed and all that. I give you all this, but I don't think people were so hungry as much as the word of mouth got out that it was good. Maybe a week before when they released the embargo, and then the spoiler release got out on Wednesday, on Thursday, just before the movie actually hit, and it was super positive, and people heard horror without gore.
Yeah,
and we haven't got that in like 15 years.
Yeah.
And that drove people like my mom to go see it, sure. like, well, weirdly enough, we're the public that should see it, and neither of us did see it. But point is, a lot of people around us saw right. the movie. So I think there's a little bit of this lesson to come back to. Make a good movie, people would show up. Make a piece of shit, well, Fantastic Four.
Right, right. Or... And again, I think, like, make the movie that the audience wants to see. I think that there's something to when you market a movie. This is my Rogue One argument, right? Like, the Rogue One marketing showed me all of these things that I wanted Rogue One to be. And then I went and saw Rogue One, and those things weren't in the movie. And I was like, well, what the fuck did you sell me? You sold me on this movie and you're not delivering it. So I guess you have to make the movie that the audience wants to see. And if the audience isn't necessarily clear on the movie, then when they go and see it, it's not good. I think that's largely when movies fail, it's because the audience didn't get what the audience wanted from that movie.
Yeah. On the other hand, if you don't give them what they want, but you're clever enough, you're going to be rewarded
right.
for that.
Right. I think that like Split is a good example. So Split was marketed as this thriller, and there was a big, big twist in it that ultimately audiences were okay with. That's kind of one of those interesting things.
Yeah. Split was intelligent too, the way they released it. That was another small release that got bigger and bigger and bigger with time. And I mean, they had to because the director was getting booed. But
yeah, it held number one at the box office, I think, for a week or two. So
yeah, and they released it in the dumping ground of January. Yes, so that was good too good. For them. Yeah, and I think it was a good marketing for that movie.
Yeah, I think if Mother had come out in that award season window. So people know if they go to the movies to see the thriller with Jennifer Lawrence in award season, it might be a little weird. I don't know.
There's a lot of good stuff coming. So
speaking of weird, you guys downloaded your shit there.
Yeah. Sorry, Beef. Beef okay. Fell asleep.
I did. I had drool going on.
Yeah.
I'm so happy I have someone to talk about this crap now.
I can play both sides.
I mean, you don't have to, but you know,
I go both. I go really weird. This Tomb Raider poster. I think it looks cool. I think it looks just like the last Tomb Raider game that they made, which is really cool. Which is kind of like this origin story stripped down. She's got a bow and arrow. She doesn't have the guns. She's not.
So I'm the only one that didn't saw the neck thing before everybody online said it was a thing.
I honestly, I glanced at the poster and thought, okay, it looks like the video game, and maybe that's why I didn't catch the neck, because I'm just like, yeah, it looks like a video game character, but her neck is like 6 inches longer than a normal human's would be. And I see again why they did it, because they wanted to create some space between her chin and her shoulder, because she's kind of doing that thing where she's looking behind her. But it's weird to look at it. Yeah, it's weird.
As I said, I didn't even saw it before it was pointed out to me.
I mean, again, like movie posters are notorious for this terrible Photoshop, but it's weird. And Alicia Vikander is beautiful, very human beautiful being. Woman. So the fact that they felt the need to do any Photoshop is bizarre.
It tells you how stupid Hollywood is.
Yeah, yeah. But it looks cool. Was there a trailer that came out with this, too?
Yeah,
it's came coming
out
tonight.
It came out earlier today, and then they pulled it. And then they're going to release it again later today, apparently.
Cool.
Yeah, it was supposed to be released during some kind of IGN event tonight. Releasing right now.
Yeah, shows you when you stick your neck out there, bad things happen.
Oh, for shit's sakes.
Yeah, it's not on the list, but Mark Hamill told me to watch football on October 9th for no reason, and I'm like, oh!
Okay.
Sure. I don't watch football, but I'm guessing Star Wars? Just guessing. I was like, you should watch football on October 9th for no reason, but okay. Sure.
He's going to do his Joker impression and make Jack Nicholson some money.
Maybe.
All right. The other kind of big news was the Emmys this past weekend. Again, I didn't watch the Emmys, and I guess a lot of people didn't watch the Emmys because the ratings weren't great for the broadcast. But I think the takeaway is that Hulu won 8 Emmys. Netflix won a bunch. This is interesting. Netflix, okay, so HBO, 29. Netflix won 20. Hulu won 10. I mean, this is good for streaming. We were just talking about a Hulu movie. Handmaid's Tale won big at the Emmys. So,
yeah, I mean, it's showing you that all these other platforms and everybody else can compete. It's not just...
Yeah. And if it wasn't for Handmaid's Tale, my favorite going in, I think, was Westworld, Beef. So I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Mine, too. It's okay.
When is Westworld starting again?
Never.
Seriously? They're doing the Battlestar Galactica thing?
It's probably going to be November, December.
Okay, so November, same thing as last year, then. Yeah, so not no. never, well, same thing as last year.
It was in I think it was October last year. Still feels like never, and I think that's way early. I'm going to look that up. You speak amongst yourselves about the Emmys.
Okay. You're going to have a bunch of Blade Runner to watch and a bunch of robot.
Robot. Again, I don't think that the Emmys, I don't know. It's TV is getting so splintered between its networks, its cable, its premium cable, its streaming. Some of the other streaming stuff, there was a Beatles documentary that won, the OJ Made in America, which was kind of this long form documentary that I think ended up airing on ESPN, their Black Mirror episode from the recent Netflix season one, Veep last week, tonight, Stranger Things, Night of, Big Little Lies. So, I mean, it's really kind of all over the map, and it's been something like 10 years since an actual big three network show has won one of the lead series Emmys. So I don't.
Let's be honest. TV is not TV. TV is now the 45 minute format.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a 45 minute to an hour form. That's a 25 minute to an hour format.
Yeah. However you put it out there, and as long as you send screeners, you're going to get nominations.
Yeah, but I just watched a Colbert introduction this morning, actually, and it was like 88 shows that were not network shows were in nomination or something like that. So it's, you know, now it's basically they have their format show. TV will never be what people remember and thought would be the crown jewel for a while. Right. TV is dying. That now what you need to have TV is some kind of cable in your TV. You choose who you pay for the type of signal you receive.
Right.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, you're not saving much money anyway.
Yeah, when people tell me you don't have TV, I'm like, I don't know. I have like $25 of TV subscription that goes on my credit card every month anyway. And I have an internet bill, so I'm paying for TV somewhere.
You're not cable, you're not cord cutting, you're just swapping.
2018, and they don't know when.
Oh.
Yeah.
They don't know when?
I got nothing.
Listen, it takes a lot to make all those robots.
Yeah, I mean, they can't use real people anymore.
They keep killing them and bringing them back. It's messy. Speaking of robots and people dying, Henry Dean Stanton, this is one of the kind of, 91 years old, this guy was in so much stuff. Aliens, I guess for me, I kind of always think of Harry Dean Stanton, Alien, I'm sorry, the first one. But bummer.
Yeah, if you're not called Ripley, you don't come back to the next movie. Even if you survive, usually they kill you in between movies.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even the cat.
Even the cat.
Oh, that sucked.
Or the kids, or whatever you want.
All right. Trailer dump. Well, we can watch a 3-hour cut of Superman, or we can watch the 80s version of the Thor Ragnarok trailer. Both pretty cool.
I would much rather watch the Thor Ragnarok trailer again, because this was fun and hit me right in the 80s spot, you know?
Sure.
But Superman, I know it's full 80s, but it's just...
Where's the viral marketing for Justice League? This is like the time that they need to be pumping like viral marketing for Justice League. Getting people excited for it, because this is now people are starting. Nobody went to the movies in August. People are starting to go back to the movies to see things like It and Kingsman this weekend.
Woo-hoo.
They better be launching.
It's not really good. So
they better be launching new trailers for that. Right. I mean,
but you know what? The problem
it
is.
Good.
I heard it was not. I heard it was really tongue-in-cheek American comedy slapstick. I was like, oh, fuck.
Oh, well, we will love it.
Yeah, you will.
Ha-ha.
I won't.
Ha-ha.
But you're a cheap date when it comes to the same universe. I'm sorry, but you are.
Yeah, okay, at least to the same universe, I'll give you that. If you didn't follow that up with the same universe, I was going to be on a plane.
That's all it takes? Beef, you're a cheap date.
I can kick you in your giblets.
I think the problem with Justice League is that they didn't know what would be in the movie until last week or if they do.
So well, what? Neither did.
You know what?
Neither did Rogue One.
Yeah, that's what I was exactly going to say. You got to go Rogue One. You got to show people something that they think they're going to want. And whether it ends up in the final cut, you just say, yeah, the marketing department.
Even if you just got to put scenes from Wonder Woman in the new trailer.
No,
That's what they did in the last trailer.
From the movie of Wonder Woman.
That's what they did in the last trailer. They put cut scenes from Wonder Woman at the start of the Justice League trailer.
Awesome.
Yeah. You gotta build people's expectations. Honestly, I don't know at this point. Rotten Tomatoes. Justice League is not going to be Rotten Tomatoes proof. So if they haven't done a good enough job in the meantime pumping up people's expectations, people are going to look at Rotten Tomatoes and go, well, Rotten Tomatoes was right about Batman versus Superman. It was right about Suicide Squad. It was right about Wonder Woman, which turned out to be very good. Chances are this isn't a case of the critics not getting it. This movie's probably bad.
But just imagine if we still have Snyder's visual with Whedon text. Just imagine how good this movie could be.
But I don't know if there's...
No, you're going to give me this for at least 10 seconds. Sure. We're going to take it away.
Okay, start drooling now.
Because I know you're going to take it away with good reason, but...
I just don't know if we have enough time. I don't know if there's enough time to make that a reality. And almost as soon as Joss Whedon took over, his own personal life got blown up. So is he giving it his all?
This movie's cursed. Curse, I tell you.
I don't know.
It's going to be Green Lantern all over again.
Oh, my God. Okay. No.
Yeah, that was the last breaking news that there was Green Lantern at the end of this one.
We already like Wonder Woman and we already like Batman. They only have to make The Flash and Aquaman look cool and the movie will be a success.
Don't
then they
forget
can
about
go,
Cyborg.
Yeah, I already did. they got it.
And Aquaman already looked cool.
Yeah, they got to have the moment of, remember when we saw Avengers and it was really our first time seeing the Hulk as part of the team. That was our first time really seeing Mark Ruffalo.
You mean that spinning shot?
Yeah, that was our first time seeing the Hulk done the way we kind of always wanted him to be done. And people were like, oh, where's our Hulk movie? They got to do a Hulk spinoff. That's what they need with this. They need people to come out and do, yeah, the movie was okay, but oh, I really want an Aquaman movie. Oh, I really want a Flash movie. Or I guess a Cyborg movie would be okay.
I think just with the trailer, people are already, we want the Momo Aquaman movie right now because Momo Aquaman is amazing. Let's face it.
Mo Aquaman? Is that what you said?
Momo Aquaman.
Cal Drogo Aquaman.
Yeah, I can't even do that.
Sure.
This has been episode 340 of Legends Podcast. I'm Beef saying, don't ever try to say that again, Wing.
Momoakaman?
I'm Lobster saying, Mother!
Mother!
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to leave us feedback, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Legends Podcast. For all our contact information, as well as other shows, look to GunnaGeek.com and KrakenCast.com. You can also visit LegendsPodcast.Lipson.com, where you'll find our complete archives. The music heard on this podcast is Danger Storm by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at Incomputech.com. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of each individual host and do not represent Legend Stream Canada, Gunna Geek, or Kraken Cast. No infringement is intended.